This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming, to movies, TV shows, and pop culture, to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Contributing editor at Fandango, Eric Davis, is going to join me to discuss the Sony and Marvel falling out and other entertainment news. Thanks for joining me, Eric.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I went and saw Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, and I actually loved it. But I wasn't sure what audience this was for because it was a bit gory a little bit. So was this for like young seven or preteen or adult?
You know, I think it was sort of for everybody. You know, I feel like it kind of was a throwback. You know, those Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark were really big, sort of fun little horror stories that people who grew up in like the 80s used to read. And, you know, I felt like the tone of the film sort of felt like a throwback to the 80s and the type of movies that they made back then, which, you know, felt like maybe they were a little bit more aggressive and it was still a kids movie, you know? And so, you know, right around the time when the PG-13 rating came about, where it was like these kids movies are a little bit too much, but it's still a kids movie. So I felt like it straddled that line, you know, Stranger Things. If you've ever watched Stranger Things, I feel like is the same sort of thing, you know? It straddles that line in terms of being for kids, it stars kids, it's about kids, but it gets a little bit scary. It is a little bit gory. There are monsters, you know, there are sort of gory special effects. So I think it's a little bit of everyone. Definitely not young kids, but I would definitely say preteen, teen, you know, these kinds of ages are used to seeing content that is a little bit gorier than we've seen.
What I liked about it is that I grew up reading Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. It was an old book. It was tattered, but I loved it. And to see how they made all those little short stories into a big movie, I thought it was well done. And I love how it set it up for a sequel. So that's going to be pretty cool. And I wonder if it's going to be this time instead of the late 60s, if this time in the second movie, it could be the late 80s or mid 80s. I think that would be pretty interesting.
It could be. Of course, you know, no sequels are not guaranteed. I think the first movies have to make a certain amount of money for them to guarantee a sequel. And I don't think they've announced the sequel for this film yet officially. But I do agree with you in terms of the way that they took all of these short stories and weaved them together so it felt like it was one big story, instead of just like an anthology. An anthology would be like a bunch of short films basically just stitched together. Even though this is based on short stories, it felt like a one cohesive story, which I liked about it.
Now, speaking of sequels, Spider-Man, poor Spider-Man, what's going on with Sony and Disney? How did this partnership end?
You know, there is a lot happening. And I mean, the specifics of it, I don't think a lot of people really do know. But, you know, Spider-Man Far From Home is now the most successful Sony movie ever. I mean, it's grossed over $1 billion worldwide, which is huge. And, you know, for a lot of people that aren't familiar with Spider-Man being in the MCU, you know, because we've kind of gotten used to it by now, this was an unprecedented deal between Sony and Disney. Sony owns the film rights for Spider-Man. Disney makes the Marvel Studios movies. They came to an agreement for X amount of films to be able to utilize Spider-Man in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That agreement looks to be reaching its conclusion. And so now everybody's talking. Disney says, we want more of a stake in the profits that this film is making at the box office, because we're really the ones who are producing the movie and Spider-Man is part of our ongoing story. But Sony is saying, no, this is our character. This is the most important character that we really have right now in terms of kind of exploring his universe. And so we want to keep all of that for us. And so, you know, both sides making strong arguments. And this is, of course, what we're hearing in the news. Also, being said that Kevin Feige, who is the sort of the chief of Marvel Studios, because Marvel is now doing a lot more, they're doing TV series on Disney Plus. It's taking away from him being able to really focus on these Spider-Man films. And so right now, as we speak, it seems as if they are parting ways. It seems as if going forward, Spider-Man will not be part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Instead, they're going to weave him off into their own world, and maybe that involves Venom, and maybe it involves the Spider-Verse and Miles Morales and that kind of stuff. And Tom Holland will still play Spider-Man for the foreseeable future, but he will not be in a Marvel Studios movie. At least that's what it is today, but who knows? Next week they could make a deal and he's back in. So, never say never.
Do you think Sony did the right thing? I personally think that they cut its nose off to spite its face, because it's part of the MCU, Spider-Man, and you get all of these other characters to incorporate with Spider-Man. Fantastic Four, because Spider-Man was in Fantastic Four at one point, and he also was helping the X-Men, so he could have done that. I mean, there are so many crossovers and that Spider-Man could have been a part of, and now he's stuck in his own universe. Do you think Sony kind of should have made the deal?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's really Sony to blame. I think, I think both studios made good arguments. Both studios, want what they feel is their fair share. Sony has had a very successful Venom movie. They won an Oscar with Into the Spider-Verse, which is arguably one of the best comic book movies ever made. They may feel confident that they can take Spider-Man and do their own thing and be successful without Marvel Studios. And so I think if you're a fan, maybe you're a little bit bummed out, because, I personally would have loved to see Spider-Man with the Fantastic Four. But I would also say, don't count it out. It could happen again. It could happen down the line. Deals kind of fall apart and come together, and we don't know what the future will hold. And I'm sure at some point, even if Spider-Man is away from the Marvel Cinematic Universe for the next few years, if at any point they want him back in there, they can make a deal to put him back in there for X amount of movies. And so I would definitely not say that this is the end. We will never, ever see Spider-Man in the MCU again. But it is a bit of a bummer if you're a fan, because I think they've done a great job with him in the MCU. Then again, I feel like they've kind of reached the end of the story that they were trying to tell in the six movies that he was involved in. And so now it's time to move on into something else.
That's so true. But I'll be honest, I was really looking forward to Secret Wars. And Secret Wars had so many characters in there: Avengers, Fantastic Four, X-Men, Hulk, Doctor Doom, Magneto. I mean, it was the entire MCU roster. To see them do Infinity Wars and then boom, this would have been just perfect. And that now Spider-Man's not there. I'm like, oh, well, you took out one of the most important characters of the MCU. So I don't know what Disney's going to do. I mean, obviously they're going to make more movies, but it's just, without Spider-Man, for me, it's lackluster.
I mean, we'll see. They haven't announced Secret Wars yet. A lot of people are assuming that popular storyline from the comics is going to be the next big storyline that they build up to. But they haven't announced that yet. And, they have a ton of characters. They have so many characters. They have all these Fox characters now, the X-Men, the Fantastic Four. I feel like it'll be okay. I don't necessarily know if they need Spider-Man. It would have been nice. But I think that they'll do okay without Spider-Man, with all of these other characters that they have, and so it'll be interesting to see what Sony does now. Do they tap into that Spider-Verse? Do they make a film that is both animation and live action that involves Tom Holland and Miles Morales? That would be cool. Do they put Tom Holland in Venom in the Venom sequel? That might happen. So I think there's a lot of interesting ways that they can go about it, and I'm curious to see.
Yeah, I was thinking about the Spider-Verse too. It would be really funny if they had Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield pop up, like they were separate entities in another universe. I think that would be pretty
cool. Which they could, but you know what? They could totally do that.
Yeah.
And I think it would be fun. And I think fans would get a kick out of it. And I think that it would take that character and it would do really interesting things with it that nobody else is doing. And, you know, that's the key here for Sony is to be innovative. You know, if you look at Spider-Verse, it's such an innovative movie. It's such a forward-thinking movie. And I think if they continue to do that and think forward and do things with this character that nobody else is doing, I think they could be very successful, not just with Spider-Man, but with all of those ancillary characters in the Spider-Man universe. You could do a lot of really fun things. You know, Sony has that whole catalog, you know, and they are. They're making a Morbius movie, a Kraven the Hunter movie, and so they're making all of these other ancillary sort of anti-hero Spider-Verse movies. And I think that's cool, and I think that's different.
Well, you know, for Sony, this isn't really their property forever. At least I don't think it is. Like, could you clarify that? Like, is this a license they have for 99 years, or do they own Spider-Man in its entirety?
They own the film rights for Spider-Man and those characters, I believe, as long as they continue to make movies every X amount of time.
Mm.
So I think that a lot of these deals, the studios would have the film rights for an IP as long as they made a film based on that IP, intellectual property, you know, every X amount of years. So I believe that that's the case with Spider-Man, but I am not, I can't tell you for sure 100% that the deal isn't going to expire, but I believe that as long as they keep making Spider-Man movies, which they will, then they hold on to the rights to make Spider-Man films. However, I believe Disney, they own all of the merchandising rights for Spider-Man, and so that's why you'll see Spider-Man. You'll still continue to see Spider-Man, I imagine, in Disney stores. They can use Spider-Man in the parks. I know that Disney World and Disneyland just announced, or Disneyland just announced a Marvel Land that will include Spider-Man and people being able to have web shooters on a ride. And so you're still going to see Spider-Man in the Disney parks. You're still going to see Spider-Man on Disney shelves. But you will not likely see a Disney logo before a Spider-Man movie.
Now, jumping to another Marvel character, Thor. In Thor 4, I heard Ryan Gosling is going to be in that. Is that true?
I don't know if there's anything finalized that with that yet. Kind of waiting for Ryan Gosling to get into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, though. Thor 4, Thor Love and Thunder is the name of the film. Taika Waititi is coming back. I do not believe that they have announced any formal casting for that yet, so that Gosling is probably a rumor right now. But that would be cool if Ryan Gosling came into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I think he's got Gosling, while he comes off as a real sort of straight man, he's got a real quirky sense of humor, especially when you use him. You use his sense of humor. I think that that would fit pretty nicely with the Thor movies. And Gosling, I imagine, is looking and saying, hey, I got to get into this Marvel thing like every other actor in Hollywood. So it would make sense to see him come in, and I'd love to see him come into the Thor movie.
A lot of this information we got at D23. What were your thoughts on D23?
I thought it was interesting. I think that, and, you know, for Disney Plus, for the streaming, for their streaming platform, a lot of big, interesting shows coming. I mean, they're doing the She-Hulk show. They have a ton of Marvel movies, Marvel shows that they're doing. I really like the first trailer for The Mandalorian, the Star Wars show that they're going to be doing. So it looks really cool. On the movie side, I like how Pixar, the next two Pixar movies are going to be original stories. That look cool. Onward and Soul. Those films looked really cool. Soul being about jazz. Kind of, you know, I'm a big jazz fan, so that one looked really good. Showed a very, very tiny little Star Wars Rise of Skywalker trailer. Looked cool. Everybody was talking about Rey turning to the dark side. They end with that shot of Rey in a Sith robe with a Sith saber, looking like she's a bad girl. Don't know if that's probably to veer us off into a different direction. I would not necessarily gamble on Rey turning to the dark side in this movie. I can't see that happening. Probably a vision, probably a nightmare of some kind. And so I thought that was cool. And, you know, the big, they brought out Frozen 2 was really the showstopper. That, I think, is just as important as The Rise of Skywalker is for Disney this fall. You know, Frozen, the sequel, what's it going to be? Is it going to be as big as the first one? Is it going to be a phenomenon? Is it going to introduce music for the ages like the first movie did? So that movie is going to be a big one. On the Marvel front, we got a release date for Black Panther 2, but that's about it. You know, other than Kit Harington joining Eternals, that whole cast was there. Still don't know much about that movie. We saw some concept art of the ensemble cast in their costumes, but that's going to be a really interesting one in terms of reminiscent of Guardians of the Galaxy, where they had this team. Not a lot of people knew about them, but they launched that and had tremendous success with Guardians, and so hoping that they do the same with Eternals. So, you know, that was basically the crux of all of the announcements that we got there on the movie and the TV side. I'm excited about Rise of Skywalker, of course. Black Widow, I believe they showed a little bit of that, too. I'm excited about that. That'll be the next major Marvel Studios movie, will be that Black Widow movie.
I'm excited for Rise of Skywalker. I mean, I part of me was always hoping she would turn bad. I don't know. It's just I wanted her to be a bad guy and Kylo Ren to be the good guy.
Yeah, I just don't see them doing that.
I know, but...
I mean, you never know. You never know, but... I don't see them taking Rey and turning her into a villain. That would be a shocker. But it's exciting. It's exciting that, you know, we have another major sort of finale, 40 years in the making, coming out December. You know, I put up a statistic on Twitter the other day that if The Rise of Skywalker earns more than $1.4 billion worldwide, Disney will have released three movies this year. That are in the top 10 all time at the box office, because The Lion King is now in there too. So that's crazy. In 1 year, three films that are in the top 10 of all time at the box office. So we'll see if Rise of Skywalker gets there.
You know, jumping back to Spider-Man, they should just buy Sony. They're making all this money.
Hey, you never know in this day and age with consolidating and studios buying other studios. You never know what's going to happen.
Speaking of not knowing what's going to happen, one of the articles that I was reading that kind of went under the radar, the Simpsons producers were at D23 and they talked briefly that it was in talks. So, you know, it's not greenlit, but they were talking about a Simpsons movie sequel. And also, if not a sequel, they would be doing a possibility for a spinoff. And for me, I'm not sure a Simpsons movie sequel is even doable at this point. Do you think they could pull off another movie?
Sure, I think they could. I don't know if it would go to theaters or if it would go to Disney Plus. You know, Disney Plus is now going to be a big wild card for Disney because they could take properties that maybe they don't feel confident producing a theatrical sequel, and they can produce a sequel for just Disney Plus. An example, although it's not a sequel, it's kind of a reboot, but Lady and the Tramp. They're doing a live-action Lady and the Tramp, but unlike their other live-action remakes like Lion King and Dumbo and Aladdin, Lady and the Tramp is just going to be on Disney Plus. So they can... they have a little bit of flexibility now where they can take something that they don't feel as confident on the big screen and just make it for the small platform. They're doing the same thing with an Obi-Wan show. You know, Ewan McGregor, that was another big announcement, returning to the role of Obi-Wan Kenobi, prequel era Obi-Wan Kenobi, for a limited series that's going to just be on Disney Plus. There was a time where we heard that there was an Obi-Wan movie in the works, but maybe they did not feel confident enough that that Obi-Wan movie would do as well as they would want it to do at the box office. So instead, they're going to make it a limited series on Disney Plus. So that's something that they could take the Simpsons sequel or spinoff, put it there if they wanted to.
Mm. Well, they got open doors there. Here's another movie I was kind of, I'm not so sure about. It's Fast and the Furious 9. How are they going to deal with Paul Walker's character?
I feel like they're far enough away. You know, the last film didn't have Paul Walker in it, and I think they've been able to sort of move on from his character. I'm sure that they may weave in ancillary people, but we're past the film that, you know, I think it was the film before this last one where he had shot some of the film. And so they needed to sort of use his brothers to come in and to fill in the rest of the story. And then when he drove off into the sunset, that was it, you know. They kind of left it off like that, and they've moved on. And so the last film did not deal with Paul Walker. So, this, you know, maybe from a reference or here or there. So I don't believe this film will deal with Paul Walker. I mean, if anything, they may make a reference to him, or you'll see something else. But I think the franchise has delicately moved on from Paul Walker. And I mean, look at Hobbs and Shaw was a spinoff starring Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham. And so I think that they are finding ways to sort of continue and evolve the franchise without needing to rely on Paul Walker's character in order to drive and drive that franchise forward.
Here's another franchise that I thought was already done. Matrix 4. I'm kind of shocked they even want to do it, but you know, Keanu Reeves, anything he touches right now is gold. You know, he's the internet's boyfriend. And I could see why they would want to do Matrix 4. But for me, it seems like a cash grab. Do you think this is a good time to revive the series? Or,
you know, right now is a very interesting time. You know, and on the big screen, a lot of studios are looking at their IP, looking at their built-in franchises and seeing what can we revive? What can we bring back? What do people already know that we know that the audience is going to be there for this film? And The Matrix is a whole universe that you could have a lot of fun in. You could play a lot of fun in there. And you're right, Keanu Reeves is very hot right now. And, you know, bringing him back, and apparently they're going to cast a young Morbius, which means that maybe they're time traveling. Maybe they're going to try to find Morbius when he's young. So I think that there's a lot of room to sort of explore and run around. I think the script's already written, so they must feel confident with the story. So, yeah, I say sure, you know, go for it. And I think the audience will be there, sure.
What movies should we be on the lookout for September?
Well, It Chapter 2 kicks things off. You know, this is the sequel to It. Highest grossing horror movie of all time, actually, that first It Chapter 1. It Chapter 2 picks up 27 years later with the adults who are, you know, the kids are now adults. Jessica Chastain, Bill Hader, who I think is great in the film, James McAvoy, and others play those adults. And this is sort of the finale of the It. The adults come back to Derry to kind of tackle that clown. I actually thought it was a really solid companion film to the first movie, a little bit darker, deals with some more adult themes, especially these adults are trying to conquer some childhood trauma. So it's a little bit richer in its themes, but I also think it's very entertaining, like the first movie. So I would say check that one out. Rambo, there's a new Rambo Last Blood, Sylvester Stallone bringing that character back for another round of Rambo action. So that will be, if you're looking for action and blood and a lot of Rambo and a lot of Stallone delivering some one-liners, you got Rambo Last Blood. Also The Goldfinch, which is a very popular adaptation of a very popular book, that's coming out a couple of weeks into September. Ansel Elgort from Baby Driver, he stars in that, as does Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things. Also, Ad Astra, big outer space movie starring Brad Pitt. This one, you know, every fall we get that space movie that's also like a drama, that's also like an awards contender. If you remember The Martian and Gravity, Interstellar, we're always getting one of those heady space dramas in the fall. This fall, Ad Astra is that film. Brad Pitt plays an astronaut that goes on a mission to find his long-lost father, who's lost in space, played by Tommy Lee Jones. Think Apocalypse Now in space. And that's sort of the vibe that I'm getting from Ad Astra. So those films, I believe, are going to be the biggest ones of September, and they will kick off what is promising to be a big fall movie season. We can get into some of those movies next time, but we've got a big fall of films coming our way, and I'll be at the Toronto Film Festival in early September, sort of previewing a lot of the big awards contenders that'll be coming to theaters over the next several months leading up to the Oscars.
Well, I can't wait to talk to you about all that. That's going to sound like a lot of information.
For sure. Yeah, we'll definitely connect in the next couple of weeks after I go to Toronto. I'll be able to give you a nice little preview of what award season might look like as we head into late fall and winter.
Well, Eric, thanks so much for joining me. I appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
Always at Fandango, where you can get your tickets, and on Twitter, at Eric with a K.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.